Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. So we're getting into the interesting part of this year's rains retreat. First couple of weeks, settle down. Now is the time when some of you coming across boredom, wondering what you got yourself in for, and all of the great hopes, you realize just how sometimes difficult it is to train the mind. But nevertheless, the talk today is just how to keep on going, especially with boredom, and to understand that this is a gradual process. You just stick in there and don't leave the path. Keep on practicing according to the teachings. And the path actually works. It happens. And first of all, I'd like just to remind you of the importance of mindfulness, but also where mindfulness actually comes from. One of the great mistakes is people think that they make mindfulness, that they establish it as an act of will. I will be mindful. Today I will have a mindfulness day. I will be mindful when I'm watching my feet on the walking path. I'm going to be mindful of my breath. And you can understand that that goes against the sort of teachings which I've been giving so far in this range retreat, actually for the last few years. Because if you try and establish mindfulness as an act of will, in other words, you try and think that it's under your control and that it's just an aspect of your ego, to yourself, to make strong or weak according to how you want it to be, you're missing the point. And you'll find you'll just get frustration. Yeah, there'll be times when you'll be able to manufacture a semblance of mindfulness, but you'll find it won't last that long and it'll be hard. It won't have this beautiful softness and penetrating power which real sati, which real mindfulness has to have. And the key story which made me understand what mindfulness is, and hopefully that you can understand the story just in the experiences you've had so far in this monastery, or especially during this retreat. That was the old story of walking up that hill from Southwest Highway up to this monastery here, and just for the first time in many years, just walking up that hill and just not being able to recognize the surroundings. You know that story? And what was strange for me was that the slower I went, I realized the more strong my mindfulness was. I literally saw more, I experienced more. And the depth of that mindfulness could actually perceive more information. Looking through the window of a speeding car, you don't get very much. And when you stopped, and I was obviously very peaceful, very happy that day, when I stopped, just the whole hillside was actually gorgeous. And you have those experiences, which hopefully you have. It's one of the beautiful byproducts of a retreat. You know, the greens get more deep than you've ever seen before. Just you look at the stars at night and they're incredibly beautiful. And you just look at the bark of a tree and there's just so much going on there. It's amazing what's happening there. And really what's happening there is your mindfulness is increasing. It's a sign that you're getting that particular indriya, that spiritual power, that controlling faculty, whatever you want to call it, you're getting that to become strong, which means that you are going to be able to have the means to get into some deep meditation. And for me, it was also not just realizing what mindfulness was, that great sort of that strength of mind, that openness of mind, the mind being able to see deeply into things, being able to gather much more information. And the opposite of mindfulness, you know, for me, was that dullness, where everything was grey. You couldn't really see very much. Sort of, you know, it was just a brick, it was just a carpet. There wasn't really much going on in there. Even the food was just food. It was no sort of taste in it. And that type of dullness sometimes happens in the first few days of the retreat or the first weeks of a retreat. And especially for those of you who have come into this monastery from outside or those monks have been working very hard. Because what happens, it takes a while for the brain and the mind to slow down. So when you first start slowing down, just the mindfulness will not arise. When you first start doing a retreat, many days of just being in your room, just meditating, nothing much to do, nothing much to grab the mind. It's just the nature of the mind is just to basically turn off, to rest a while, and to actually to gather its energies again. It's just the nature of the mind. That's what it does. That's what my mind does. But because I've been meditating for such a long time and I know how my mind works, I give it those days, the days of dullness at the beginning of a retreat, the days when I don't expect very much, the days when I can just be walking or sitting and allow the body to slump, just allow the mind just to be, you know, just like that, just nothing really much going on. Allow that to happen and not interfere with it. Certainly not to sort of try and escape into fantasies, into plans, into doing things, into making things. Because you know what it's like in your heart, there's so many things you can still do. There's so many things you can write. There's so many projects to be done. There's so many things around the monastery. There's so many walks to be done. But all of that sort of stuff, you know, it's just really, it's escaping. It's nice actually to sit down with that boredom and just be with it. And by being with it, it's actually having metta towards it, opening the door of your heart to a sort of an unpleasant experience. That's why sometimes that metta is a wonderful generator of mindfulness, simply because it allows you to be with some of the unpleasant things. And unless you can actually be with the unpleasant things, you cannot be still enough to be able to generate the energy which creates that mindfulness. So a lot of times I realize that because I am busy monk, lots of things to do, and you're getting old, your energies are not up to that level they were when you were a young man. So because you are getting tired physically and you have still a lot of work to be done, you know, you realize that there will be sort of that time when you just have to stay with a sort of a mind which is not sort of biting, you know, towards a meditation object. But you do it with kindness. And I realize it's not my mind, it doesn't belong to me, it's just part of nature. So I don't sort of get guilty and thinking, you know, you're an ajahn, you're a teacher, you shouldn't be dull. No, you just, this is not my mind, it's just nature. I know the cause and effect, I know exactly why it works and how it works. And so because you know how it works and why it works, it's not my fault. You just leave it alone. And the great thing is because you leave it alone, it means you're not forcing the mind, you're not moving fast. Your job, my job when I'm meditating is just to be still. To be still, just to be at peace with things. To be, you know, have loving kindness towards this moment. Open the door of my heart to however I feel in whatever moment, right now. And because you open the door of your heart to this very moment, it means you're not doing anything with it. You're not running away from it, you're not trying to change it, because that degree of metta, the unconditional metta, sort of the unbounded metta, which you can, means you can love anything. It means that you're just with this moment. And of course, you all know it's very easy to have loving kindness to things which are pleasant. But the job of loving kindness and metta is to be able to spread that loving kindness to all beings and all situations, not just the pleasant ones, but the unpleasant ones. Everyone can love their friends, but to love your enemies. I don't mean people enemies, I'm talking about states of mind which are your enemies. You know, the tiredness, the dullness, you know, the restlessness. To learn how to love those as well. To love those was just open the door of your heart to them. It's just nature, that sort, it's just part of things. So when you open the door of your heart to those moments, you are really making peace with them. You're not doing anything with them, you're being still. So just like that story of me walking up that hill, because you're going very, very slowly and you're not trying to get rid of things, you're not making things happen, you're not a busy person inside your head, you're just an observant person. And there's a lot of difference between being busy and being observant. Being observant, you're just watching what's going on. And you're a protector of your mind, you're a protector of your stillness. So you just to see all these little tricks of the mind to try and do something and make something happen and make it work. You notice all those little tricks and you just keep stopping your mind from disturbing the stillness. And even though it is dull, or even maybe even restless, just you just let it be. So your job is not to move. It's just to let the whole world settle down because you, the observer, is still. You know that just how much you create the world. The mind is the forerunner of all things, the Buddha said in the Dhammapada, verse 1. So if your mind is still, the whole world starts to slow down. That's why if it is restlessness, you're just, I'm still with the restlessness. I'm still in the middle of the restlessness. Restlessness is like the storm going on around me, and I'm sitting in the middle, just doing absolutely nothing. And sitting in that quiet place, that still place, right in the middle of the restlessness. And of course, because my mind is still, I create, the restlessness becomes still. Or rather, that stillness creates the stopping of that restlessness. But the most important thing is the boredom and the dullness. All that restlessness is very often just a result of the boredom. Because one is dull, because one doesn't know how to stay with the unpleasant parts of the mind, one creates all these escapes into fantasies, into activity, into talking, into indulging in the teas and the coffees, whatever you have in there. And it simply is a result of the escape from boredom. And just like the Buddha said, just that the sensory pleasures are just an escape from the suffering of life. And it didn't really mean the heavy suffering of having, you know, great physical pain or headaches or tummy aches. It meant just that underlying dukkha of life where it's not really satisfying. It's not just grabbing you. It's sort of dull and yucky, that type of state. And that creates all of the restlessness and the dreams and the fantasies and wanting to sleep too much because sleep is an escape. That's what one of those prisoners told me, incarnate, many, many years ago, 25 years ago when I used to go over there, actually more than that now. And they told me, 1 hour of sleep is 1 hour off your sentence. And you know, that was a phrase which was going on incarnate at the time. I don't know if it's still present incarnate. Prison farm up the road, but that was what they were saying. Sometimes the monks can feel like that. You know, if the day is very long, yeah, sort of not enjoying it, then it's another day off your sentence of 3 months, rains retreat. But be careful because you're wasting a great opportunity there. That's just an escape. So instead of trying to escape from this moment, we just give it kindness, be with it, be still. And you're creating mindfulness. You're creating joy. You're creating happiness. You're creating this power which makes it so easy to meditate and gives you huge amounts of energy. And that's all it really needs, just to be still. So those of you who want to really get rid of the boredom or the dullness, you've got to be with it. You've got to do your time with boredom. You've got to spend those kind moments with your dullness. Spend enough of those, and then you find it just vanishes. It just goes. And when it does go, you've actually created what real mindfulness is, this beautiful alertness of the mind. And not just an alertness, but almost like an inquisitiveness, a fascination with things. Because when the mindfulness is very strong, it's really interesting, whatever you look at. And I mentioned before, it's not just the grasses and the lichen, or the lichen, whatever you pronounce it as, on the rocks and on the trees which you see on the hillside, it's just everything else which you see becomes really interesting. You know, even the breath becomes interesting, the body becomes interesting. What actually is happening there is the mind is waking up. And that waking up of the mindfulness, getting it strong, is just really important to get into some nice meditations. You have to have strong mindfulness. So you have to bear through this preliminary period of just being with the dullness. And then it's an automatic process. It happens for everyone. You're not special. You're not different than any other human being. You've got the same type of mind. So all you really need to do is to follow the instructions and don't sort of interfere with it. And you just stay with it, be peaceful with it, be kind to it, and do it properly, do it with wisdom. And after a while, you wake up. That's what it feels like, and just the mind becomes more bright, more alert. So if it really just wants to feel the body, it can actually feel it. It's very similar, this is an old simile which I've used in other contexts, but I'm adapting now, very similar to when you walk out of this hall this evening after the talk, and you walk out into the darkness, and you can't see hardly anything at all because you've come from a lit room into the darkness. It takes a while for your pupils to dilate so you can actually see more detail of what's out there. And that's just really similar to what mindfulness is. When you start meditating, or you've done the first couple of weeks of a retreat, you know, it takes a while for, as it were, the pupils of the mind to really dilate, to see the more subtle images. Because it's been used to this bright light of the five senses, the bright light of coming and going, doing things, working and talking and coffee club and all those bright lights which have stimulated the mind so much that when you stop that stimulation, everything is dark and dull. But just wait for a while, just as you go out this evening, and soon you can start to see things. And that's one of the things which, you know, sometimes because, you know, I don't live so far from the dining room, and sometimes because, you know, I forget my flashlight. Very often I've just walked up that path, you know, from the dining room to my hut, you know, not using a flashlight. I remember other monks. I remember Wisarada, one of the most frugal monks who ever lived in this monastery. I mean, people going to his hut sometimes thought he wasn't living there. It was an empty hut because he hardly had anything there. Incredibly frugal monk, but he used to not use the flashlights. And he used to walk back and forth from his, you know, hut every evening. And because after a while you just wait for a few moments and you can start to see shapes. You just wait and relax a bit. Don't be too fast, and soon you can see your way. You know, even in some of the darkest nights, it's amazing what you can see. And this is just what's happening. Just the eyes, as it were waking up. Mindfulness with the eye is actually happening, so you can see your way in darkness. And darkness isn't dark anymore. You can actually see. And that's so similar to what happens with mindfulness in your meditation. You just wait for a while. You don't do anything. You don't strive. You don't struggle, because that just takes away the energy. And that stops, you know, as it were, the pupils of the mind dilating. It stops the mindfulness getting strong because you're doing things. You just wait for a while. And then this sort of dullness, this nothing really interests you, nothing is really satisfying the mind. You know, the cause for all this restlessness and running away here and there and thinking and doing things and engaging with other people, all the very cause of that, the reason why you get restlessness is taken away. The mind brightens up and just this very moment becomes interesting. It means you can sit here and just the body is more at peace. Again, that simile of going up that hillside, what was unexpected, I sort of understood just how mindfulness would get stronger the more slow you get. But what really struck me was just how beautiful that mindfulness became, how beautiful that hillside became. The stronger the mindfulness, the more beautiful things became. It became interesting. And of course, once things become interesting, once your mindfulness is strong enough that things become interesting, my goodness, it's impossible to get bored. Just look in the bricks in your hut. It's just incredible what's going on in there. Sometimes that cave in there, it's like a kaleidoscope on those rocks. You know, the amount of stuff which is going on in there, it's amazing. It's like you've got your own movie theatre. Actually, they have these 3D, what are they called? Is it Cinemax or something? Like when the movie is all around you? That's what it's like in my circular half-dome cave. It's all going on all around you. This is just not the mind going crazy, it's just the mindfulness starting to really get strong. Now, of course, that is an important part of this retreat, to learn how to develop that strong degree of mindfulness. So don't try and just force the mind onto the breath. Don't think that, oh, what I'm supposed to do is to, you know, get these jhanas and nimittas and enlightenment and all that sort of stuff. Just try and get the mindfulness established, first of all, and understand how mindfulness is established, this beautiful mindfulness. So once that mindfulness is established, all the restlessness and the boredom, they're just gone. And then you're having a great time. Because no matter what you do, you go for a walk and there's just so much to look on those paths. Incredible what's going on under your feet. And you just watch it. And sometimes you've seen people like that. You've seen people as you're walking back and they're just watching a rock. They're not going crazy, they're just, you understand exactly what's going on in their head, because I've been there and done that. They're just, wow, you wouldn't believe what was going on in that rock. So, yeah, I understand. And they're just there, and it's no boredom at all, they're just so fascinated. by what's happening. Just the mind has woken up. You can see things. So not only does that give you great joy and happiness, but it means it starts to banish this dullness and tiredness, which is one of the greatest problems in a meditation monastery. Because once this dullness, then it's a terrible thing to sort of live with for so many days and months and weeks and years, and just having to just bear with it. And just out of compassion, I don't want you to have that sort of pain and suffering of just wondering how many more days to go, weeks to go. Gee, when is this going to finish? Now, this path is not a path of suffering. This is a path of great peace and happiness. It's the end of suffering we're supposed to be teaching here, not just enduring, enduring, enduring. So when that dullness comes, and restlessness, as I say, is only the other half of boredom, which is the result of getting bored. You want to go and do something, think things, fantasies, dreams, plans. There's no end of things you can think about. But all it is an escape, and it's the wrong way of dealing, you know, with the sort of the boredom, restlessness. It's the wrong way of dealing with it. Be still, stand your ground. Don't do anything. Wait. Have some kindness. Make peace, be kind, be gentle with this. If you do that, after a while, just it all starts to disappear. The dullness goes, and then you start getting alive. That's what it feels like. You know, you sit in the hut there, and you just want to meditate. You can't get cross-legged quick enough. Simply because the mind is just so bright, you know exactly what's going to happen. You're going to get into a nice, peaceful, beautiful meditation. When the mindfulness gets strong, it is like a snowball effect. You get strong enough that you love meditating. Because you sit down, there's just so much going on, just watching your body, being with it, playing around, having all these, talking today with someone, all these amazing experiences with your body, your body expanding and things moving, and like Ajahn Chah's, just, you know, the body exploding and a liver over here and half a brain over there, half a brain somewhere else. And this is what I call like a meditator's playtime. You know, can't watch movies, there's no TVs in this monastery. But you get all this weird stuff with amazing special effects, you know, happening right in your room, sort of in your mind. And of course, you know, you've heard me talk about this so many times, you've got nothing to be afraid of. You know, you don't sort of explode. When you come out of meditation, everything's in its right place. So you don't have to scrape your liver off the wall of your hut. So it's all sort of fine. It's just what happens when the mind becomes strong and the mindfulness gets so powerful it starts to become playful. I call it like perception getting playful, but the same thing really. It's just the mind from getting playful, just basically stretching its wings and just going to places where it hasn't been before, just for the fun of it. And I really love that sort of stuff, and I encourage that stuff because it means some things are happening. And of course, you don't get bored, you know, just when your liver is floating up through the ceiling. You know, that's really interesting stuff. So all this boredom and stuff, you know, is not at all there. Okay, you can get afraid. That's why I talk about this sort of stuff, to realize, to tell you you're not going crazy, you're not sort of nothing to be afraid of. It's just part of the course. It's just mindfulness getting strong. But it also should happen that this gives you a sense of joy as well, because strong mindfulness is happiness. And, you know, that's where it comes from. The mental happiness is always associated with strong mindfulness. And so, of course, you know, as the teacher in this monastery, you know, you want everyone to be happy, to be smiling and just having a good time. It's just compassion. You know, everybody has that compassion, wanting people to be happy and not suffering in life. So you get people getting strong mindfulness and they're having a great old time. And you know, that makes me happy to see people just smiling and just being able just to love meditating and just, you know, can't wait again to get on the cushion and just having a really interesting time. And it becomes a snowball effect, because once that mindfulness gets that strong, the boredom is just not there anymore. A lot of the tiredness and dullness is gone, not totally gone, but the worst of it is way left behind. So the meditation's getting interesting, it's getting fun, things are working. So that, you know, you find it easy sort of to relax a body, because to be able to relax a body, you have to know what this body is. You've got to have enough awareness of it to know what's relaxing or what's not relaxing. You know, to be able to even to let go and do this amazing thing, which I say, of actually doing nothing. You have to know exactly what you're doing and what you're not doing to understand what's happening, because you know, if you've got blindfold on, you don't know whether you're doing something or you're not doing something. And of course, that's what happens when the mindfulness is weak. It is like having a blindfold over your mindfulness. And you think you're letting go, but you're doing a lot. You think you're sort of doing a lot, and maybe you are letting go. You know if it is letting go, because it works, you become still. But you need that degree of mindfulness, you know, strong enough, powerful enough to actually really see what's going on in the head or in the mind, wherever else your mind happens to be located, to be able to see exactly what we mean by letting go and doing nothing. So it's a tough one, I agree. You need to have enough mindfulness to be able to let go properly. But you have to let go to get that mindfulness in the first place. That's the difficult part, and I acknowledge that. But once you sort of get that strong enough mindfulness, and you do have a bit of energy, you do have more happiness, it means that you can really see quite clearly what's happening inside your mind. So you know exactly what to do, and you can see what you're doing when you sit down. Then you sit down and you are relaxing. You are having no expectations. Sometimes people say these expectations, they just sneak in. It means you're not mindful enough. You don't see what you're actually doing. Things don't sneak into your mind. Now you create them. You allow expectations. You actually don't allow them. You actually make the expectations happen. That's one of the great sort of insights, you know, which I had a long time ago, having enough mindfulness to see that thoughts don't come into my mind from nowhere. I go out and make a thought and bring it in. And I just trick myself to think, oh, that thought came from nowhere. It's not my fault. I didn't do it. Yes, I did. Every thought which comes into my mind, I go out and make happen. So anyone who says, oh, just these thoughts, they just come into my mind, I don't know from where, it's not my fault. You went out to find them. You created them. So don't blame other people. It's actually quite a relief to know that, because it realizes that you can actually end these thoughts simply by having enough strong mindfulness to not do that. You can see what happens. The mind is just getting still inside, but it's a bit wanton. It just goes out and just, even though you are getting a bit peaceful, it just makes things happen. One of the reasons is, and I was just contemplating it this afternoon, you get to a certain state of strong mindfulness and peacefulness, all because of letting go, and then your sense of self starts to own your meditation. In other words, it's done really, really well so far. Now it's working. Ah, yeah, this really is me doing the meditation now. Sort of pride, that sense of self, that sense of ego, suddenly wakes up. So it doesn't really want to own the bad meditation, because you're embarrassed about that. Once the meditation goes good, yeah, that's mine, I want that. You tend to own it. And of course, once you start to own the meditation, it's been going really, really well. You have been letting go. The mindfulness is getting strong. You're waking up. You've got some energy. You've got some happiness. You can watch things. You're still. And then you go and stuff up by owning the state and interfering with it. Yeah, here I am. I can watch the breath now. Now I know what to do. I've got to make it a beautiful breath. You really get involved. And please, please, please remember just to continue doing what has worked so far, which is just doing absolutely nothing, allowing these things to happen in spite of you. Every time you get involved, you always make it worse. So that particular type of meditation, you get the mindfulness and things are going well. And say that, you know, when you get that type of mindfulness, the breath comes to you. You're just nice and relaxed, and because you're aware, this breath is really interesting. It's just like you can get drawn onto a brick and see all the amazing textures and colours and different sort of shades of colour in just one simple brick. The breath is actually fascinating. Every moment of the breath is totally different than any moment of breath that ever existed before in the whole universe. Not just your life, but any other people's lives as well. Every moment of breath is totally unique, and I'm not just saying this, this is what it feels like when the mindfulness is strong. You can actually see it, its uniqueness. So it's actually fascinating. And of course, it's joyful as well. And this is just what happens. And of course, what happens if you're not careful, the sense of self comes up and owns that, and you can't go any deeper. It's as if, right, now I've got to this stage, I know exactly what to do now, give over the wheel, I'm driving from here on in. It's as if you've had a very good chauffeur, he's got you so far, and now you think, I'm close to home, I'll go the rest of the way. No, you have to sit in the back and stay in the back. And don't actually reach over and take hold of the wheel. You really have to keep out of things. And if you do that, the mindfulness can actually get even stronger. And I know that I give this to Ajahn Bhamani because he pointed this out to me a long time ago. The whole point of this meditation is to abandon the five hindrances. It's a beautiful way of actually describing the path of meditation. To abandon the five hindrances, to make sure they've gone and they don't come up. Because once the five hindrances are out of the way, then enlightenment factors, they can arise. And so the whole point is actually to abandon these five hindrances. And you know, the more those five hindrances are absent, the more especially mindfulness becomes really strong and clear and reliable as well. So all that's really happening, this particular way, one way of many ways of looking at this path of meditation, is the mindfulness is getting stronger and stronger and stronger. And again, just because it gets stronger, it means it can actually see more subtle things. So that when you get to a beautiful breath, you know, you just, the mindfulness is playing around with this breath. And it's just so caught up with this breath, it just doesn't notice anything else at all. Again, just like just watching the brick on the wall, it's very beautiful. You know, you forget what else you're doing. You know, everything else, all your other duties and all your other sort of commitments, you just forget them because you're totally caught up with this amazing stuff which is happening in this brick. You forget time as well. When you're doing stuff like that, I remember actually this one monk. He was, I won't say who he is, but he was, when we went to the evening meeting, he was actually stirring a rock. This was in Wat Nanachat. And we did the chanting and the meditation. It was about 2 hours. And when we came out again, he was still there, still watching the rock. He'd been there all the time. We'd been meditating and chanting and stuff. I thought, wow, great monk. That's what you should do. So, if you know, during the talk here, on the way in one evening, if you see a rock outside and you watch it, great. And if we, when we all leave afterwards, you're still watching it, wow, then that's a real monk. A real anagarika. So what it really is, you're really getting involved. And you're getting very still and very peaceful. And because your mindfulness gets very strong, it's very easy to watch the breath. So you don't force the mind onto the breath. You encourage the mindfulness to become strong so it happens naturally. And you encourage that mindfulness by being kind and being still and just allowing it to happen. You don't do it through force. The striving actually weakens the mindfulness. It creates a sort of a plastic, false, unnatural type of mindfulness, which is not that useful. So you do the letting go, the stillness, the kindness, the patience. Mindfulness gets strong, and when it does get strong, you're having a great time, and everything is really a lot of fun. And it's very easy, and it means when you do go and sit down and you watch your breath, it's so easy to watch this breath, and you can see a beautiful breath. You can stay with a beautiful breath. You can do walking meditation. My goodness, it's every step. It's amazing. So mindfulness gets so strong. So when you're doing the walking meditation, remember that's one of the things we're supposed to be doing, being still, so the mindfulness can get stronger and stronger and stronger. So the point is that you're just watching these feet moving and there's so much going on and just in one step and just a feeling of just a foot just going down onto sort of the wooden boards. It's almost orgasmic. Okay, you're laughing here, but this is what I'm speaking from experience. And yeah, it's just amazing just what's happening there. And this is just your mindfulness is strong and it just intensifies just this feeling of joy and all the amazing different feelings which is going on there. And so when you start to do this, you're really alert, you're really awake, and it's natural, it's totally unforced. So you imagine just if you see all those incredible feelings in the feet, when you sort of sit down and watch this breath, oh, this is gorgeous. brilliant, gorgeous breath, because you just, you can feel every moment of it. And it's amazing, it's beautiful. And because it's beautiful, it just, it takes the attention. So the attention doesn't need to be forced at all. It's just the object captures your attention. And because it captures your attention and pulls it into it, so you're staying with this breath and it's just natural, it's effortless, it's beautiful, the mindfulness gets stronger and stronger and stronger. As it gets stronger, it gets really refined. Refined in the sense it can see more subtle things. It's just like the microscope, like the laser, just burrowing into tiny aspects of reality. Because this is tiny aspect, just this one moment of breath happening right now. This one fraction of an in-breath is just so delightful. That's all you really need to watch. And this is what happens. A beautiful breath turns into a no in-breath, no out-breath, just beautiful. And of course, that's where the nimittas come up. And when nimittas come up, if you haven't got enough strength of mindfulness, you just don't know really what to do with them. Because you may have all the information, but you haven't got the sort of the brightness of the mind to be able to see what to do with them. You can't actually notice whether you're interfering with them or whether you're really letting them go, because the strength of mind is not sufficient. So as you become still, if you do get a nimitta, don't play around with it, just stay still. The mind will do the playing, not you. And again, don't interfere and start owning these things and think, wow, nimitta, great, at last. Now I'm going to take hold of the wheel because I'm close. I just want to go the rest of the way. Now don't do that. Don't slip up on the doormat of jhanas. Just carry on as you were doing, just being still and allowing mindfulness to get stronger and stronger and stronger. Because mindfulness gets stronger and stronger and stronger, again, the nimitta gets brighter and brighter and brighter. It's just nature. It gets more joy, more happiness, simply because that's what happens when you stop doing things. Energy just goes into mindfulness. And it's just the way you look. It's not really, the joy in that sense is not really part of the nimitta, it's part of the mindfulness. This is what happens when it gets very, very still. And of course, that means you can really see just all these, what they call upakilesas. These upakilesas, as in the Upakilesa Sutta, these are very refined doings. I didn't call them defilements. I've just changed added a little bit more to that word. It's refined doings of the mind. So you start doing things with this nimitta, and that's where you stuff up again. But the mindfulness is so strong, you can actually see that. You can see this last vestige of a controller just wanting to manipulate this. I understand why, because you're in very close, incredible states of mind. You just want, you expect. And that creates this movement of the mind, the doing. But mindfulness is strong enough to see that. So you do need this powerful mindfulness, and this is how it's created. And after a while, it's just nature. You've got no choice in this. Mindfulness gets so strong, you can actually see all these stupid things the mind does. And all you need to do is see it. You don't need to do anything again. That great simile again, Mara, I know you. The monk never needs to chase Mara away. Never needs to throw things or hit him with a stick. All the monk or the meditator needs to do, I know you. Once you start to see that upakilesa, that little bit of doing, just knowing it, seeing it, the mindfulness of that is enough. It disappears by itself. So that's what happens. Because the mindfulness is so strong, you see these little bits and pieces, they disappear immediately, and they're not disturbing you anymore. And of course, the mindfulness gets stronger and stronger. So strong that you just go in. And again, this nimitta becomes so beautiful, it just draws you in. It attracts you in. So what happens? You don't do anything. It's total automatic process. And of course, what's happening, the deeper you go, the stronger your mindfulness is. I mention this because sometimes people say in these jhanas that, you know, you don't know what's going on. sort of you're dull, they're a waste of time, you can't get insight, blah, blah, blah. Look, your mindfulness is getting really strong. And I think it's, you might interpret the description of the fourth jhana where mindfulness reaches its peak of purity because of the stillness, the equanimity there. What was it? Upeka Parisuddhi Sati or whatever. Anyway, it's the purity of mindfulness through equanimity is a usual translation. And because equanimity, that's just stillness. Call it stillness. It's a course of stillness, absolute stillness, incredible peace, nothing moving. And of course, your mindfulness gets incredibly strong then. You just keep it there. It just happens. And of course, when you come out of that sort of state, your mindfulness is really super-duper power. And then you understand just how you can get enlightened. Look, I know it's books are written about this, we have arguments about this, that do you need jhana to become enlightened? But look at just mindfulness, ordinary mindfulness, and this power of mindfulness and super-power of mindfulness, especially if any of you have ever got a jhana, and when you come out afterwards, the mindfulness which you have afterwards, you know, you should know just what's necessary to become enlightened. This enlightenment is not an easy thing, it's a huge, big thing. You need those powerful, penetrating mindfulnesses. Super strong. And that's what happens when you come out of the jhanas. Mindfulness is so powerful, you can look at anything and go right into it. And just joyfully. And so you understand just what's necessary. And where did it all come from? The development of mindfulness. You don't develop it, you don't make it happen. And already I'm very pleased that many of you, that you know, the breath has come to you. You realize that when you sort of learn how to let go a little bit, not fully because you're not really seeing what you're doing, yeah, you get peaceful. The mindfulness starts to get going. The boredom starts to disappear. The frustration starts to vanish. Things are actually happening. You get some nice meditations. You're getting some happiness coming in. Great, it's working. Just keep on going. This is only 2 weeks of the retreat. You've got a long way to go yet, a lot of opportunity. So don't blow it at this particular time by starting to do things. If you have got some boredom, just keep up there with the patience and with the kindness, with the stillness. It goes, it disappears. It has to because it's the nature, it's the law. It's nothing to do with you. It's not your ability or lack of ability. This is a natural process. It's Dhamma. So it's totally independent of who you think you are and your abilities or lack of abilities. So understanding that, having that little bit of faith, you realize just keep on trucking, keep on going. Keep on trucking, that was from the 70s. keep on going. And then after a while, I give back old memories. After a while, you find just the mindfulness starts to increase and your happiness level goes up. And your ability to meditate becomes very, very powerful. And then you start, these states become natural for you. So it's just getting going. So any boredom, any restlessness, yeah, it's par for the course. Don't give up. Don't think that you're hopeless. Don't get disappointed. You know that this is par for the course and you know how to deal with it. That mindfulness needs to be strengthened. Not through willpower, but just by being still, by being patient. And you wake up and your meditation starts to take off. And you sit there for hours and have a beautiful time, being happy. Insights coming, seeing deeply into the nature of bricks and other sort of things, like the mind and the body. And you start to really get some great fun in this meditation. And also, who knows, maybe get some enlightenment experiences as well. So that's dealing with boredom and dealing with restlessness. That's the talk this evening. Kandalayam avarakitaya sarvina vidamase sadhu, 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 avarakitaya. Very good. Ahaṁ sammā sambuddho bhagavān buddhaṁ bhagavantaṁ abhivādin sāvakkhato Bhagavata Dhammo
Supatipanno Bhagavato Sāva.